welcome once again to what I call American Exposé, listeners. It's the 25th of August, 2005. The situations are very, very apparent in front of our eyes if we do the research and understand the big picture in place. Very, very difficult to do this. Very difficult to understand the big picture. As we see in the paper here, dated today, Thursday, Russia-China practice landing. And certainly you know about that, but it was in the paper. Thousands of Chinese-Russian troops launch a mock amphibious landing on a Chinese beach Wednesday. Moscow's defense minister said the joint war games underscore a growing strategic partnership between the two nations. It was always there, in my opinion, never to depart anytime, because the number one goal is to be allied with communist countries. That's what they are. Communism, not dead. Communism controlled by the United Nations system and its member states. Taiwan tries to aid its defense. Taiwan's cabinet on Wednesday withdrew a special budget for a massive U.S. weapons package, part of a political maneuver aimed at getting the opposition-controlled legislature to pass the long-delayed package. For more than a year, the opposition Nationalist Party and its allies have used their slim legislative majority to hold up a special $15.3 billion appropriation, saying it will spark an arms race with China that would bankrupt Taiwan. Included in the package are 8 diesel-powered submarines, 12 anti-submarine aircraft, and 6 Patriot missile batteries. Then we see North Korea deal confirmed. Pakistan's President General Pervez Musharraf confirmed for the first time Wednesday that his country's former top nuclear scientist, Abdul Qadir Khan, gave centrifuge machines for enriching uranium and their designs to North Korea, a media report said. Amazing. We have this September 11, 2001 set up disaster, another Pearl Harbor, another Gulf of Tonkin resolution. We report to you the U.S. report to the U.N. Counterterrorism Committee, dated December 19, 2001, from the State Department. On September 28, 2001, the Security Council unanimously adopted Resolution 1373 under Chapter 7 of the Charter of the United Nations. This historic resolution established a body, listeners, of legally binding obligations on all UN member states. It defined the common core of the new international campaign to deal with international terrorists, their organizations, and those who support them. We'll deal with this more as we move along, but this is the big picture in place. The prominence goes to the UN system as of September 11, 2001, and that's just the way it is. We are a vassal state of the UN system. We don't recognize it because we're not told this. The Secretary of the Treasury is the U.S. Governor of the International Monetary Fund of the IMF. We have a Treasury that is held hostage by the U.N. system, and Alan Greenspan is the alternate U.S. Governor of the IMF of the Federal Reserve System. If you want to increase our numbers, people, do not take it farther back than the Federal Reserve, I recommend, if you want to increase our numbers. If you don't want to increase our numbers, why are we doing this? Couple of special guests today. How are our laws made? Wouldn't that be interesting to find out? And why things happen to the detrimental decisions of our country and our people. We'll be back to continue the broadcast. This is American Exposé. Stay with us. With the broadcast. Welcome back, listeners. Further evidence of the situation we live today, listeners. Oh, boy. How about this? Recommendation number 5 of the Bar Treaty of 1947 as to the proposed International Trade Organization and its charter, because rehabilitation of the world's shattered economy and the relief of peoples from hunger, want, unemployment, and despair are central to the restoration of lasting peace and the rule of law. American lawyers are naturally interested in proposals to deal with international economic problems and those of international trade and commerce through cooperative action under the auspices of an agency of the United Nations. The provisions of a charter creating and implementing such an international trade organization may also have important effects on industry and commerce in respects which are of interest and concern to lawyers, listeners, to lawyers. Considerable preparatory work as to the charter of the proposed international trade organization has been done at a conference in session in Geneva, Switzerland, since April, but the charter will be given its final form in a conference to be convened in Havana, Cuba, on November 21st, the form of which the draft charter will emanate from the Geneva conference is not yet available for study by your committee. It is known that the document has been largely changed from the form in which it was taken into Geneva after a few hearings in this country. Anyway, what are they talking about here, people? Well, the House delegates asked your committee, along with the Committee on Commerce and the Section of International and Cooperative Law, to study and report to the House concerning the International Trade Organization and its proposed charter. Now, this is just a big one section of the Bar Treaty of 1947, internationalizing our courts to the UN system. And this is where we are today, people. If you want to reference this, this should be in other links in AmericanExpose.com, or I suggest you go to unattractive.com, that's unattractive.com, and you will connect these dots to the loss of our jobs today and the rulings by the courts, such as Mariana Fauser overturning the ruling of the people of California voting no medical benefits for illegal immigrants, quote-unquote illegal immigrants, or migrants under human rights treaties, as the UN system would say it. This is what she did. She overturned the will of the American voters in California and said, yes, they can have medical benefits. Sure they can. And so the continued direction of the chaos in America is well underway, and there's the problem. Now, also, how are our laws being written and made, and why do they appear to be detrimental to our survival as a people of this country? We have with us Patrick Winston. Patrick, can you hear me?
Yeah, I'm here.
And then we have Gary Robinson, who's been on my show before, I believe. Gary, welcome to the broadcast.
Good afternoon, Chris.
We are in a situation today that is very, very ominous, where our Congress does not listen to us. We see an apparent change that is very obvious to us. What's the big picture in place?
You want to go, Patrick, or?
Yeah. Well, before we get into this, Chris, I'd like to make a statement, if I may.
Sure.
Take about 3 minutes. I've been listening to the shortwave most of my life, and I listen to it more from international news, entertainment, and information to national news information and talk shows. And as many of the talk show hosts realize, the shortwave is our last visible trace of media for us to exercise what we term as free speech. When we lose this, we lose everything. And already we see evidence that a demo public and cartel infiltrating the airwaves of the shortwave in order to confuse and divide us further by putting out programs that claim to be unraveling the New World Order while they support and promote the same people that are taking us into the New World Order. I'd like to ask the talk show host to stop promoting the lawyers, judges, and politicians by making statements such as they sound like the real deal. The only real deal these people have to offer us is more deception and division. If they are for real, then why do they attempt to please two masters? Why do they stand guard for a two-party system and offer themselves up as relief valves in order to calm the listeners and further entrench them into the belief that they can cure the controversy at hand by contacting the same individuals who created the problems in the first place? And start exposing the fact that these people have been lying and deceiving us since our early childhood and the educational institutions they created, to our early adulthood and beyond, and the illusionary voting booths they've built. Don't forget our interest that got us involved and opened our eyes in the first place, but put them aside temporarily so that we can first address the root cause of all our special interests. I mean, we can fail at many things in life with little or no adverse effect, but if we fail at this, then we'll surely die. I'm not going to challenge a talk show host out there who are listening to your show. And I know you all listen to each other's shows. I'm going to politely ask them to come to Pennsylvania and take an educational tour how this cartel really operates. Then you can answer your own question, how come Ron Paul never told us about this? And bring your film crews, your microphones, your recorders. Watch how the Demo-Publican cartel people stutter, stammer, lie and squirm in their seats as they're being confronted with the evidence of this blatant restructuring of the operation of government. And then get up out of your cushioned seats in your makeshift studios and take this knowledge to the cities, towns, and streets of this country. Put on the armor that our Father in Heaven has given us and reach out to the people of this nation. Let them see the sincerity and determination in your faces and not just hear it in your voices. There's more than enough evidence to prove we're not a bunch of conspiracy nuts. Now, I lost my health, my children, and my reason to live 15 years ago. And I watched Gary Robinson spend the better part of his inheritance trying to activate a populace that had become so selfish and self-centered. But I'd look at it as a small price. If I can only motivate the people that we listen to, respect, and admire to unite and lead us through their actions and not just through their voices. Make people aware of the existence of the shortwave and the alternate news source that they're starving for and the real education they've been deprived of. I may go to my grave, never seeing my children again, but at least I can try to leave them a legacy they can be proud of, and that's the knowledge and absolute belief that they have a God and a country that will stand by them. If I were to die without trying to correct the problems my parents left for me, my children won't have to curse me. I will. May our Father in Heaven bless and protect us all, even though we don't deserve it. Thanks, Chris.
Okay, very, very good. And I understand your frustration. And I would say that the Internet is going to be under control in the future as well.
I've already announced that.
Absolutely. So, Gary, we see this situation where Casey Nethercutt, who is trying to protect our borders because the Border Patrol has their hands tied, loses his home to the illegal immigrants that he helped, evidently, and Morris Dees and the lawyers awarded the home to these illegal immigrants.
It can be summed up in one word, Chris: specious. Your listeners aren't familiar with it. They should look it up. Specious is it's the motive of all con artists and swindlers. You make something sound good when, in fact, it's really bad. That's what speciousness is all about. And most of what we have in this country, I have not personally researched any of the so-called reforms by taxpayers groups, patriot groups, education groups, on and on. If you really scratch it and go behind the scenes, I haven't found anything that's represented to the public as reform, as being true reform. And you come back to basic definitions, which is, again, the use of speciousness. Change is to make things different. Of course, under a basic change, things can be made better, they could be made worse, or so superficial that it doesn't really change anything of any significance.
Mm-hmm.
A reform is supposed to be a change that corrects a problem or reduces it. And unfortunately, I have to use a strong word, liars or speciousness. I have really not found any of the different so-called reforms by civic groups or public officials to be honest. And when we come to honest, let me offer one more item here to review. I would offer to you that for quite some time throughout human history, truth has been considered that which is not false or a lie. Would you agree?
Yes.
Okay. How many people are aware that when you go into our courts of law today, truth is not based on that which is not a lie or a falsehood? Have you heard that the past few years, everyone has their own truth, that phrase circulating?
Actually, I haven't, but go ahead.
Oftentimes, if you talk to district attorneys or attorney generals and stuff, the subject area of perjury, it's common practice today that they're not going to charge someone with perjury unless they change their testimony, thereby becoming inconsistent. In 1917, a three-judge federal panel in the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals, Knappen, Warrington, and Cochran, crafted a legal definition of truth.
Okay, keep your thoughts in place. We'll continue. And once again, this is Gary Robertson and Patrick Winston. We'll be back to continue. Stay with us. Judicial theft of Casey Nethercutt's ranch is bad enough, according to one of my people, one of my listeners. But one report has it that $60,000 from Casey Nethercutt's mother and posted as bail for Casey before Casey's trial has also been sought. By the two illegal trespassers Casey gave blankets, cookies, and water to, since when is bail money kept back when the bail condition is met? This individual says if there was ever a freedom and justice line in the sand, the Casey Nethercutt case must be it. And this is the dilemma we live today, listeners. And laws and rules and regulations, there's never a repealing of any laws, ever. So, Gary Robertson, continue with your direction.
Okay. Again, to reiterate, this was a decision in the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals, docket number 2681, in the case of Memphis Telephone Company versus Cumberland Telephone and Telegraph Company.
And once again, what was the decision, just to bring people up to date?
This was crafting a legal definition of the word truth.
Okay.
Now, this is really serious. I mean, in essence, if you destroy truth and change it from, you know, that which is not a lie or a falsehood to mere relativity, how can you have justice in our courts of law if whatever you say,
well, you can't,
can be considered truth? Well, here's their wording in their ruling.
Yes.
Truth. There are three conceptions as to what constitutes truth.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. The first is agreement of thought and reality. Ponder that one seriously.
Agreement of thought and reality.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing.
The second one is a two-word one, eventual verification.
Mm-hmm.
And the third, consistency of thought with itself. So in essence, if you lie, as long as you repeat a lie in a court of law, you're telling the legal truth since 1916. Now, how can you be charged with perjury if you're telling the legal truth?
Good question.
Now, where does this all come around? Every first-year law student is indoctrinated into the practice that you must use Black's Law Dictionary or comparable, and if any word used in society has a legal definition, you shall not, you must not use society's definition. You must use Black's Law or comparable legal definition.
Well, that's spooky in itself, as we know.
Now, where this really gets going is, since this was a court decision in 1916, how many people have ever heard of the National Conference of Commissioners on Uniform State Laws?
Well, I have, but that doesn't mean much.
Right.
You're talking about the Uniform Law Commission?
That's right.
Yes.
Now, it was at their behest. They were formed, let me see here. I think it was in 1892. That was their first formal year of existence.
That's appropriate.
And, well, that was at the 12th annual meeting of the American Bar Association.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, they began it at their 1889 meeting of the American Bar. Took them 3 years to put it together.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in a very brief synopsis here, the American Bar, through the Uniform Law Commission, starting in 1892, pushed to have every state government modified so that there would be a bill drafting agency made up of judicial officers. Now you come back to the real concept of our Constitution. If there is to be a separation of powers, would the public find it acceptable that any one branch would start delegating its authority to other branches? If you do that, where is the separation of powers, especially if it's done behind the scenes and the public is never taught about it in civics? So between 1892 and 1930, if I remember correctly, that the last state to create a bill drafting agency in their state legislature was Virginia, either around 1930 or 1934. And the way this works, the concept, you heard that, you know, your legislator sponsored a bill. Well, in Pennsylvania, for example, in 1909, the legislature created a legal reference section of the state library. Sounds good. In 1917, they amended that law and moved this legal reference service out of the state library into a backroom office of the legislature itself. But they added to it the actual power, duty, and obligation to draft all legislation for the legislators.
How our laws are made. We're with Gary Robinson and Patrick Winston, listeners. We'll be back to return with more information that you will not want to miss. Stay with us. Stu Albert, listeners, civil liberties are declining in number, and the right to assert them grows increasingly chancy. When the Patriot Act is combined with a variety of authoritarian laws passed during the Clinton administration, and fanatics are placed in charge of the secret police, those who do speak out against the government must carefully watch their words. Much of what was once permitted to the people is now against the law. Indeed, with secret trials, undisclosed prisons, and torture, one may question to what extent the law actually still exists. In the meantime, according to Nancy Levant, in October 2004, the FDA approved an implantable microchip for use in humans. A tiny RFID tag, now made by several American companies like Applied Digital Solutions, Verichip, and Digital Angel, are mass-producing RFID chips and stocking chip warehouses and implantation centers. Listeners, time to be extremely concerned. We're trying to get to the roots of the problem right now with Gary Robertson. Continue, Gary, please.
Okay. Well, in order to accomplish this, the Democrat and Republican parties in unison, I call it the Demo-Publican cartel,
mm-hmm,
in cahoots with the legal profession and the judicial branches, they passed the laws again between 1892 and 1930. Creating a bill drafting agency in every state, and as you read recently about the House Office of Legislative Counsel,
mm-hmm,
in 1917, There was there in Congress was set up a separate House and a separate Senate Office of Legislative Counsel, again, for the drafting. Now, the speciousness, the deception comes in some states. You can find some publications that say this is a selection. It's a choice of the legislator whether he wants to have this drafting agency draft his bill for him or not.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm saying that's bogus. In fact, in Pennsylvania, for example, a couple years ago, a few of us tried to get the couple seemingly good moral legislators to introduce a bill in the House of Pennsylvania to eliminate this bill drafting agency and require every legislator in Pennsylvania to personally read, know, and understand the bill and sign an affidavit to that effect, and that no bill could be voted on until the affidavit was completed by every legislator. I mean, many of them were extremely hostile and angry. How dare we insinuate that they should have to read, know, and understand a bill before voting on it?
Well, insane, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, isn't that their duty and obligation?
Listen, that's the point. Is there ever a bill introduced that anybody ever reads?
No, and very rarely.
I
will say yes, but very rarely. Here's the scenario. We drafted this bill ourselves in the exact format put out by the Pennsylvania Legislative Reference Bureau.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, they had the Pennsylvania Legislative Reference Bureau didn't have any publication about it until about 8 years ago when I found the office one day and I went in and I asked them, what do you do? They called security. They were incensed. How dare a citizen come in and ask them what they did? Anyway, they finally printed up something, a little blurb about themselves, only because to satisfy my request. And that's now the standard that's handed out if anybody asks about them. But here's what happened. The legislators, the House reps, either refused to introduce or even submit it to the House clerk. Or one did, and it was turned down because it was not drafted and controlled by the Legislative Reference Bureau. In Pennsylvania, the legislators are expressly prohibited from drafting their own bills.
Huh.
And again, what the Legislative Reference Bureau actually functions as a de facto branch office of the judicial branch in a back room of the legislature, in essence. So what every state has done, including Congress, was delegate to judicial officers the legislative power, duty, and obligation of drafting law.
Now, this is where the Office of Legislative Counsel comes in?
Yes. See? Different word, different term for the same office.
There you go.
Yeah, each state has a different term. Like in Pennsylvania, it's Legislative Reference Bureau. In other states, it's Legislative Reference Service.
Or also Law Revision Council is another one that you'll find in some states.
However, in the U.S. House of Representatives, you have the Office of the Legislative Council.
Right.
Uh-huh.
Same function. Their duty is to draft all law. However, the problem and the conflict here is these are so-called drafting attorneys with expertise. The problem is they're judicial officers. Doesn't that existence fly in the face of the concept of our Constitution that judicial officers control the legislative power and duty of controlling the content of legislation?
Yeah, that just blows away the three branches of government.
And my argument is, if this is so damn good, how come it's never been taught in civics?
Good point.
Well,
why is it so secretive anyway?
That's the whole point. You know, how many people? Here's the argument. This is the speciousness, the fraud, the deception. Every legislator, public official I've ever talked with goes back to the origin in 1892 of this Uniform Law Commission. Who better to write the law than lawyers? We need efficiency. It must be written in the proper legal term. Well, wait a minute. The judicial branch is supposed to be applying the law. It's supposed to be that the legislative officials elected by the public who say what the law is. So they've it's such a blatant violation of our concept that had it ever been taught, how many people would really support this demo public and cartel for doing subversion and behind the scenes? Again, They didn't classify it top secret. I mean, you can find it if you ever hear about it. But if it's so damn good, how come the public has never been appraised of it?
Well, how come the public has never been appraised about a lot of things?
Well, this is to the core of the basic function of government. Now, my argument here is, if you have special vested interests, wealthy, moneyed, the ruling elite controlling the demo public and cartel, and behind the scenes, they've actually changed the system of government so the judicial branch is controlling the legislative power and duty of creating law. Where is the government of, by, and for the people, other than voting? And you're voting on things that you know nothing about.
And voting is a hit or miss. It's a eeny, meeny, miny, mo.
Well, along with this, let me offer you one other thing. Going back to 1776 in Pennsylvania, in the Pennsylvania Constitution, in 1776, the first passage of first consideration of a bill required it being printed and submitted to the public before it could even be considered by the legislature.
Makes sense.
Now, in 1874, the Pennsylvania Constitution was amended. This is 1874, requiring three readings. Every bill shall be read at length. So up beginning in 1874, the Pennsylvania Constitution mandated that even if your elected lawmakers didn't sit down and read it, they had to listen to it three times,
mm-hmm.
word for word.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then in 1968, our demo public and cartel saw to it to amend in the 1968 Pennsylvania Constitution a requirement concerning three considerations, which means only reading the bill title.
Oh, jeez.
And you will find that has been replicated in every state. The reading of the bill is merely the reading of the title.
Mm-hmm.
So your legislators are no longer even required to sit and listen to an entire bill being read to them. Now, where is their obligation to our society? Why are people dying and fighting and dying for democracy?
Yeah.
If these people get paid for a job that they don't do? And no wonder we get so many bad. How many people have heard this thing that the legislators complain, well, we didn't know what we voted on. We didn't have time to read it.
No, Gary, I'm turning my head. I'm looking at two phone book-sized volumes of NAFTA.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know.
Who drafted it?
There's the question. Who drafted it?
And why did our public officials vote on it, voting on it, making law, if they didn't know what was in it?
And selling out our people.
Right. Now, here's where we have to stop saying that, you know, it's government, bad government. No, it's bad demo public and cartel. The two major parties, the Democrats and Republicans,
mm-hmm.
are not interested in democracy. There is the speciousness, the con artist, the swindler.
Well,
we convince you of one thing while, in fact, we're doing something else.
Actually, when you get down to democracy, this is not what our country was formed under.
Well, representative republic, however you want to.
That's the proper word.
Right. But still, either way, these two groups do not fulfill the interest of representative government and good government. And we've got to stop saying it's bad government. It's bad Democrats and bad Republicans.
Mm-hmm. Actually, it's bad lawyers, it's attorneys in position of prominence that have a different oath that they take.
That's right, but most of your legislators are not attorneys. The problem is these people have an obligation to be voting against all legislation unless they have personally read, know, and understand it. You've heard the thing, we need to eliminate legislative gridlock?
I've heard that.
Okay. We have this problem because we don't have gridlock. Our founding fathers never intended for 5,000 bills or even to be drafted, let alone 200 passed a year.
Right.
And you can't even pass 200 if you read these to the level of being able to know and understand what's in them. So what is the really their ulterior motive, this Demo-Publican cartel? Now, I call it primary fraud. Here's another example. The political system has been designed to exclude the citizens from our system of government except for voting.
And voting's a fraud today, as it is anyway.
But here's why. Do you know that the primaries were created by statutes around 1900?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, most people have heard and were studying in civics. Well, the public was fed up with the smoke-filled back rooms, the corruption in politics.
Mm-hmm.
Here is the fraud, the speciousness. The public was sold, we're going to give you, the public, control of your party by creating something called a primary. Now, let me ask you this. I don't know how you're registered voter, but theoretically, let's say you're Democrat. If you're registered Democrat, are you a member of the Democratic Party?
Yeah, I'm not either anymore.
Well,
I don't participate. I stopped participating after Ronald Reagan deceived us.
Okay. But if you were registered, does that make you a member of the Democratic Party or registered Republican, a member of the Republican Party? No. By law, what I found in Pennsylvania statutes and every state I've looked up so far, around 1900, when the state crafted a primary law, what was crafted in there was they allowed you to vote. What they didn't tell you that registering as a voter of a Democrat or Republican, unless you were also selected as a committee man for the party, the law was written, only committee people are legal members of the party. A registered voter is not a member of the party. Therefore, if you were a registered Republican, wanted to go to a Republican, local committee or county committee meeting, unless they personally wanted you there, they would have a right to legally have you arrested and barred from attending a party meeting unless you were a party committee man.
Not only that, but if you go to the voting polls and you ask for a tally of the votes, unless you are a member of the party, the Republican or the Democrats, you're not allowed to know.
Because you're not a legal member of the party, the way the laws have been. What this did was convince the public that you were going to get control of your party, not by attending party meetings, but by going to a ballot box. What the law really, they never told you that they set it up with legal wording that only committee people would be legal members of the party. They never told the public that. The whole idea was, again, to convince you were controlling the party. That's what they were telling you publicly. But what the law actually did was bar you, the average registered voter, from any legal right to attend your party meeting. Well, other than voting, what they did was set up a system to exclude the citizens from political participation other than voting. And most people never questioned it. Oh, gee, I'm told I'm getting power, so I got to go vote in the primary. It was a way of stealing power from you by fraud.
And we were born into a lie about this, weren't we?
Yes.
There's the point and the problem. We're never educated.
Right. And what I'm telling you, go, every one of your listeners, go to your state laws, look it up, find out whether you're a legal party member just being registered to vote as a Democrat or Republican. So what we've done is we, in fact, have a system of, it's a political cult. I call it the American political cultism.
Mm-hmm.
We have been excluded from our system of government except for voting. Now, the way to correct this is that the people, all your different civic groups, I mean, taxpayers, parents' rights, children's rights, educators, everybody's complaining about bad laws, aren't they?
Yes.
Well, you know, why don't you stop conflicting with each other? What those in power, this Demo-Publican cartel, has done was create bad laws, and they've divided people over these narrow single issues that they get passionate about. The people become so incensed over their single issue that they're vying for attention to their issue only. Most groups are saying, well, if you fix my issue, you'll fix the whole system of government. No. Uh-uh. Guess what? All these different groups have to band together politically and run to oppose the Demo-Publican cartel. What you need to do is run for state legislature, get into office, and eliminate this bill drafting agency. That's the way you're going to get power back. No other way unless you run for the public office and put an end to this corrupt violation of separation of powers. See, what I want to do is run for I've run before, but I'm going to run again. I want to get elected to the Pennsylvania House of Representatives. I want them, that clerk, to turn me down and refuse to accept my bill.
Okay, very, very good. This is very interesting, listeners. The Office of Legislative Counsel of the U.S. House of Representatives is on our website. You can check it out. You're welcome to call in and get in line, as we have a couple of callers already. 800-313-9443. We'll be right back. Stay with us. House of Representatives Office of Legislative Counsel is on our website, AmericanExpose.com. Let's take a phone call. Once again, the number to call, 800-813-9443. We have contact information for Gary Robinson. We'll do that in the second hour. Let's take Tim in Texas. Tim, welcome to the broadcast.
Hey, good afternoon, gentlemen. Fascinating program. Y'all asked a question. Somebody asked a question a while ago. Who drafted NAFTA? I can tell you one person that I know of for sure, my stepfather. My stepfather is a professor of business and international business type courses at a major university in Texas. And it was a conglomeration of those type of people. And I know that's that for a fact.
Well, do you have any information on the formal White House drafting agency for
no, sir.
These international treaties?
No, sir. I can only speak of this because I know it's because it's my stepfather.
Well, I know there were teams of different individuals involved in some of the universities, so clearly you're right. But we've got to go higher up, just like the House and Senate with their drafting agencies. The White House, I've been unable to track down who is the official office regulating or controlling the central drafting.
That's probably by design.
What was the what was your stepfather's justification for NAFTA?
My stepfather is unfortunately one of the brainwashed people that thinks
he's
a globalist. That's just the bottom line. He's a globalist, and he's very proud of it. He's very proud of his business, his doctorate in business, and. You know, he's got his placard hanging on the wall, and he's a doctor, and he reached the top of his profession, and now he's just one of the brainwashed people, and you know, God bless him. It doesn't make me love him any less. He's always treated me like a son, and bailed me out of a lot of stuff, and you know, he's a good man, but and. I just don't dare mention politics around him. I mean, you just don't do it. So I don't, and it's really sad, and there's nothing I can say that would change his mind. He's just an old fella that's a professor, and like I say, top of his profession, and he's just doing what he thinks is right to make our country a nice, cheap place to live, and he just doesn't get it.
It's not working very well, though, is it?
No.
Yeah, he doesn't have any answers, does he?
No, he does. He doesn't have any answers, and that's the reason why there's really no sense in mentioning because all that happens when I mention it is he gets mad and blows up, and it's just not right to treat the old boy like that after he's treated me like he has all my life.
It's sad that a lot of good people have been suckered into this demo Republican cartel. That the problem with these international treaties, when you read our own U.S. Constitution, it provides that the treaty takes precedence over any federal or state law. So
that's
if
Article
the treaty
6.
Has provisions that are harmful to America, you
right.
know.
Yeah, and they just don't know what they're doing. Hey, y'all are doing a great job. Thanks for taking my call, and God bless y'all. And see you later, Chris.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Very good. The second hour is about to begin of American Exposé on RBN. Listeners, stay with us. We will return.